On the Pilot TV podcast this week, we are back in Moordale for a little love therapy with Asa Butterfield, Shruti Gatwa and the gang in a final series of Sex Education over on Netflix. We're dealing with romantic and fraternal difficulties with Naban and Mawan Rizwan in Juice on BBC Three, and we're wrestling with a little insomnia alongside Antonia Thomas and Craig Roberts in Still Up over on Apple TV+. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV podcast, your essential guide to every show that matters, and a podcast that is overjoyed to skip the preamble and head straight into news, because AMC's Interview with the Vampire has finally found a UK home, because the BBC has picked up this particular piece of Anne Rice's Immortal Universe. Have you guys heard this?
Yes.
I saw you. I mean,
yeah. Are you excited?
I was going to discuss it in the news section where it belongs.
I'm a maverick boy. I'm a rogue. I'm a rogue agent.
When it comes to things he's interested
in. Yes.
Yeah. He's decided this is such big news.
That's right. It's headline news.
Unbelievable.
Now, crucially, we don't know when, because they still haven't said, but hopefully we will have a confirmed air date before too long.
Do you know what? I'll tell you, it'll be soon. It'll be sooner than you think.
Sooner than I think. Will it be this week?
No. My guess is not this week, next week, the week after.
Really? That soon?
I think so. Because usually with these things, they decide they're going to acquire something that's been around for a bit and that they can show in full on iPlayer, such as I'm sure.
Because it's going on iPlayer and BBC Two.
Yeah, but it'll go out on BBC Two, you know, I don't know, Sunday night, 10 o'clock, and it'll be all available on iPlayer as well, I'm guessing. Mm. And I'm sure that will happen. Usually, as I say, when they make these announcements about American shows they've acquired, it usually ends up arriving in about a couple of weeks' time.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
This will be exciting.
Yeah, it's exciting.
So hopefully we'll be covering that very soon. But right now, that's out the way. I am joined by my very own immortal co-pilots, Louche, debauched bloodsucker, the vampire Boyd, and Queen of the Damned, Kay Ribeiro.
Hi, James.
Hi. You're good?
Yeah.
He shoehorned, so what happened there is he shoehorned the Interview with the Vampire story, news story, into his intro so that he could make those jokes about
it. Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, okay, just checking.
It's commendable on some level.
It's a refresh. It's a refresh of the format.
Now, we recorded last week's Pilot Plus in this studio yesterday. And when we finished, let me tell you, the greatest Pilot TV podcast of all time was recorded.
Here we go.
It was the spoiler special for Foundation Season 2. And let me tell you, genuinely, it surpassed all my expectations. It was the geekiest, nerdiest, most in-depth, most granular discussion of Foundation you could possibly imagine with me and Helen O'Hara and Amon Warman. And I think everyone should listen to it.
When you said that, I missed the bit about when R1 ended. I thought, oh my God, he thought that episode we recorded was really good.
No.
I know, sad. Yeah. No, he was talking about one that we weren't involved in.
Yeah. You did not participate in this.
That's exactly
podcast.
What he's saying.
Yeah.
He's saying that the greatest ever Pilot TV podcast was one that neither of us was involved in.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, guys. But I guess the moral of the story is, you know, you as the listener should judge for yourself by subscribing to Pilot Plus for the paltry sum of $2.99 a month, for which not only will you get to listen to the Foundation Season 2 spoiler special, but also Pilot Plus every Thursday at the new earlier time of 6 a.m. Yes, that's right. I bumped it forward a couple of hours, and which also means you will get the regular show on Mondays at 6 a.m. as well, so you can listen to it on your morning commute instead of waiting till 5 p.m. so you listen to it on the way home.
That's a genuinely useful thing.
I think so, and it has no ads as well. So, it's a win-win-win. Win-win-win-win-win.
Fantastic.
Amazing. Okay, so that's enough plugging and shilling for Pilot Plus. What have we been watching this week?
I have been watching... So, first of all, I've watched a lot more of The Morning Show because I have been commissioned by John Nugent of the Empire Magazine reviews section to write the Empire Online review of Season 3 of The Morning Show. So I'm powering through. And spoiler alert, I'm really enjoying it.
Oh, I've just realised.
What?
You know, when we did review this, because we reviewed The Morning Show, I should say, on last week's Pilot Plus, and I hadn't prepared any kind of pun intro to it.
Yeah.
And Kay made me do one off the cuff at the last second. I can't remember what it was, but it was terrible. What I should have said was, Boydie, are you a morning show person?
Oh.
Hey?
Yeah, that would have been good.
That would have been good. Yeah.
If only we could get in that time machine. Let's go back.
Yeah. Well, I am a morning show person. Yeah. So I'm enjoying that very much. And it's really interesting stuff to say about it. Yeah, it's fascinating. our full review is, of course, on Pilot Plus.
It is.
You have to listen to that. Yes. I think it was a pretty full and frank discussion.
Yes, it was. There were some unfair comparisons, I will say, made.
Unfair comparisons? Unfair on whose behalf?
No. I'm just joking. I'm yanking your chain. That's what's happening right now.
Yanko his chain. Hey?
Oh, my God.
Hey? Good gag. There's a character in the morning show called Yeah, It's Funny. It's funny, guys. That was a funny joke.
We'll let the listeners be the judge.
I compared a bit the morning show. I'm just explaining to the listener who might not be subscribed to Pilot Plus. I compared a bit the morning show to Succession in the sense that they have, there's quite a lot of crossover in the subject matter and the milieu of these worlds, the media, TV, channel.
The comparison, that part of the comparison was fine. But it was unfavourable.
No.
Well, anyway, let's not get bogged down.
My opinion was more nuanced, dare I say. Anyway, so I've been enjoying that. And one of the greatest things of the year happened this week.
Oh.
In terms of what I've been watching, which is that I was sent screeners for a new TV show that's going to come out in November.
Give us a clue.
It's one that is it,
was
delayed.
Was it close to you, or was it closer to the end of the world? Like where, exactly. Whereabouts did this particular show?
It was very
show...
much closer to the end of the world than me. Yes, the show formerly known as Retreat, if you remember, originally when it was first announced. This is, of course, I'm talking about A Murder at the End of the World.
I think you find its official title is FX's A Murder at the End of the World.
FX's A Murder at the End of the World, which is coming to Disney Plus. In the UK in November. Praise be the Lord, I got sent the first two episodes. Obviously, cannot review them. Obviously, apologies to listeners for even mentioning it, but you know, this is what happened.
It's a brag.
Are we having a screener off?
It's a bit of a brag, yeah. I know, yeah. Having a bit of a screener off, because you've been sent stuff.
I've been sent the boys Gen V, which I obviously cannot talk about.
Oh, I've been sent Gen V as well.
No, fine, whatever. Yeah.
But there's one you've been sent, the Apple TV Plus one that you've been sent, that I haven't been sent. I'm furious
that's
about that.
True, that yes. Yeah. Yes,
so
I got a very
like a
early link to something.
But with screeners.
Yeah, okay. A screener swinging
competition. Anyway, obviously, this is the show that I'm most excited about of the year by some distance because it is by Zell Batman.
More than Frasier.
More than Frasier, even more than Frasier. Wow. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And Britt Marling, make creators of my favorite show, The OA. So I can't go into it much. But I just want to tell you what happened. So I got sent this thing. I think it was on Tuesday, quite kind of, you know, early evening. And I was like, oh, amazing. This is brilliant. I think I was out at some event and I came back home.
Some ritzy event.
About 10 o'clock or 10 p.m., which for me is pretty early. I thought, plenty of time to watch these two and a bit hours of A Home at the End of the World. I could not get it to work. You know how sometimes the screeners, you know, I couldn't.
You got a bit confuzzled by the two-factor authentication.
So, well, first of all, it was just the thing. Do you remember I messaged you?
Yes,
James?
You did.
Yes.
Do you know what did? You never have technical issues. It's always me.
Every now and then you do.
Yeah.
So I could not. It was the email address it was sent to as part of, because we've got more than one email address, all of us who work at Bauer, we've got like
privilege.
It's privilege. Absolutely privilege.
Too many email addresses.
So I couldn't get, so I think they sent it to another email address, and because my phone was stolen recently, I couldn't do the multi-factor authentication for that email address that I do have a screeners account for, right? So I was like, I was messaging James to find out, what do I do about multi-factor authentication when of a thing that I've lost my iPhone for, and I was completely confuzzled by it. So I emailed the help section of the screeners.com thing.
I thought you were about to say, I emailed Brit and Zal.
Did you speak to the guy in America like I had to?
No, I just emailed. I didn't verb it. I didn't have to. They were very sweet. And they're like, don't worry, we'll try to sort this out. We'll send it to your other email address. And they did. Then when I got that sent to my other email address, this is potentially really boring, sorry, but this is what happened. I couldn't watch it on my TV, on my proper TV. I couldn't get it to, yeah.
What?
For some
reason,
it wouldn't cast.
It wouldn't cast.
Well,
you could watch it on your laptop, but you couldn't watch it on your massive TV.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So I'm saying that's not an issue.
It's not a huge issue, granted. It was just another slight, yeah, James knows.
It is.
especially for a show that, you know, you're looking for, there's a big, epic, big budget, huge, visually stunning.
You remember when I complained that I could not, in good conscience, watch Picard on my laptop screen and demanded that they find a way to allow it?
So,
what's worse for you, though? Can I just ask a quick question? What's worse for you? Is it worse to watch it on your laptop or not on that massive screen? Or is it worse for you to wait till the next day to watch it on the big screen?
That was very much my dilemma, to be honest.
Okay.
So, I was desperate to watch it. And yet, I was like, oh, can I really watch this on my laptop? No.
God, you're
ridiculous. But you know, I was like, do you know what? they're being so helpful on and pre-replying, considering obviously in America these people are people who run the screeners.
It was midnight, to be fair.
Digital screeners. It was going on for midnight by this point. And so I just emailed them again. It's like, me again, literally. I now caught having trouble casting using my Apple TV, because you say Apple TV as in the product, the thing, Apple TV.
The little puck.
The puck. And I had I had the app for digital screeners on my Apple TV, but it wasn't working, and it wasn't giving me a code that worked when you kind of authorized the whole thing. It's so boring to explain. I'm sorry.
I'm loving this.
I know.
This is live tech support.
The only person who would appreciate this story would be James. So the listeners, I'm sorry, but James at least appreciates it.
I do understand.
So I sent them this quite lengthy email explaining my dilemma, and they got back to me so quickly again,
and they fixed
saying,
it.
And what it is I had to reboot my little Apple TV puck thing. It was it was that Apple TV's fault. Nothing, not their fault, but it wasn't even their fault at all or anything. It was
You're
just
still head up.
My Apple my Apple TV puck was fucking up. So I did that. I rebooted that, and it got to work. Fuck. By this time, it was literally midnight, and so I basically stayed up till 2 a.m. watching.
No.
Yes. After 2 a.m. watching these two episodes of a murder at the end of
which
the world.
At the end of that incredibly long Shaggy Dog story, you literally cannot talk about.
No, I can't talk about. Yeah, can't talk about it.
I think everyone's in agreement that that was a great story.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I knew you'd like it. Yeah.
See, we don't save all the good stuff for Pilot Plus subscribers.
You can talk. Again, yeah.
I mean, let's not refer to that flight story.
It's fascinating. Yeah, that's all I can say.
Wow. Mm. So that was what Boyd tried to watch.
Yeah, I did watch.
And watched, but can't say anything about.
But now, I'll tell you, the final thing to say is, what I can say, I assume, is that only two episodes. I now really need to watch the rest of the episodes.
Which you're going to have to wait for a while.
Which I'll have to wait for a while. Spoilt little shit that I am.
Wasn't going to say it. Okay.
SLS. Yeah. I have been watching. So I finished watching The Lovers.
Oh, I'm desperate to get back to that.
So how many eps have you watched?
I only ever watched the first one, but I saw a clip for it, which was Alice Eve losing her shit and citing all of the celebrities she could have had threesomes with. And I was like, this is hilarious. I've got to watch the rest of the show.
Yeah, it's so good. So anyway, I've watched them all now. I had watched originally three, and it's just, I mean, Roisin Gallagher is just the absolute standout star. I mean, Johnny Flynn is fantastic, but she is just so good in this. And yeah, it's just a very satisfying last three episodes. I didn't quite realize at the time how much Northern Ireland was part of the fabric of this story, and like, you know, and it was, yeah, it was just really, really good. So I don't know, Boyd, have you watched the end of it?
No.
Okay. I can say on behalf,
I've watched more than James's, but yeah.
It's very satisfying, and yeah, I really enjoyed it. The other two things, right, so very quickly, I've watched Selling the OC, which is a kind of a spin-off of Selling the Sunset, which first time round, when the first series came out, I was just like, this is rubbish, it's Selling Sunset light. Second season picks up.
Oh, Terry and Boyd used to bang on about this endlessly.
Selling Sunset is good. Selling the OC series one, not so good. Series two, better.
Right.
But I don't want to dwell on that, because the thing that I do want to dwell on, which is reality.
Oh, God.
Yes. I got up early this morning to watch something for work, and as I was watching it, I almost texted it was too early to text the group, but I was just so excited, because I thought, this is what I want James to watch for the cultural exchange next week when I do Game of Thrones, and if Celebrity Race Across the World isn't scheduled, this is what I want you to watch, and I think you might enjoy it.
It seems doubtful, but sure.
Open mind. Come on, we talked about this.
Okay.
Your Mum, My Dad on TV. Yeah. Not literally my dad, because my dad's dead, but like just...
this took a dark turn. Yeah.
But that's the title name. And it's hosted by Davina McCall, and it's basically single parents who've been nominated by their children to go to this retreat in the countryside to get a chance of finding love, second chance at love. And it's really good. It's kind of like an antidote to Love Island. So, you know, they're all... none of them are in their 20s. They all have interesting backstories. They have developed personalities. Come in all shapes and sizes, and it's just really heartwarming and lovely and inspiring and great. And I just think, for reality, because it's a new kind of reality dating show, you know, all of them usually take the same format in terms of like their young 20-year-olds, all look the same, identikit. This is different. This feels fresh. And I think I want you to give this a go.
Right.
Come on, what do you say? And it's already on TV, so you can watch it easily.
Oh, good for me.
James is old enough to be on the show, let alone.
Ouch!
Come on. Let's go on.
Well, I feel like, so, and if we're going to things that I've watched, I watch Celebrity Race Across the World, so I feel like I have already, you know, drunk from the poison chalice this week.
Which, by the way, has been scheduled again. It starts in the middle of next week. It just starts a week later than the original plan. So you could,
victory is mine.
Just saying, could stick to that.
Can we postpone it, please?
Presumably this old person's dating show is not like going anywhere. So that could be
it's
the
only
next
on for
one.
2 weeks. It's a 2 week event.
Yeah, but it's not like we need to cover it live, is it?
Cover it live. Yeah, almost got kind of West Country.
Yeah, we're not covering like it live. Farmer. What happens? Also, loving the countryside. Another great dating show. But okay. So after, all right. So we'll do Race Across the World next week.
Yes. Celebrity Race Across the World. Celebrity in inverted commas, but carry on.
And then the week after, we'll do this, yeah?
Possibly. So,
and
yes.
I'll watch a different show.
I know it feels like I'm shilling for Pilot Plus this week, but we are shaking up the format and doing some slightly more. We're breaking away. I think partly because we were doing spoilers for Only Murders in the Building, which made me want to die. So we're going
to... Because you didn't actually go to the effort of watching
is basically the reason. Yeah. But no, you guys enjoyed it. You did a very good job, but I don't really watch it. So.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God, we did it. Hey, Boyd. You did quite a good job.
So yeah, we're going to do a few more cultural exchanges, some more fun stuff.
No foundation spoiler special.
It isn't the greatest pilot episode of all time. Absolutely true.
Okay, so we'll do both those shows. Great.
Right, okay. So in addition to watching Celebrity Race Across the World, yes, really, I watched a bit more of For All Mankind because I'm starting to get anxious because we now have a date. Mm. Just doing a bit more news now.
Yeah,
we have a date for the fourth season of For All Mankind, and it's November? Mm. Or is it October? It's October or November?
I think it's October.
That's even sooner. Either way, it's alarmingly close given that I'm really only two-thirds of the way through the second season. But I've got to the bit where the Cold War is heating up.
Oh, no, November 10th, sorry.
November 10th. So I've got a little bit of time. So I've got to now finish season two and watch all of season three before that drops. So I need to, you know, I need to get moving. So I watched that, and I really enjoyed them. And it all kicked off with Russia. It really did. You know, no spoilers, but... Yeah, the Cold War is heating up. So very much enjoying For All Mankind. But as we've sort of alluded to, I've got so many other things to watch because The Morning Show, I need to watch the rest of that. Sex Education, which we're reviewing this week. I watched a lot of that this week. So a lot of stuff on my list at the moment. So I need to slot For All Mankind in where I can.
Yeah, I was interested. Yeah, should we wait till news to talk about it? You know, the fact that the trailer's out and they confirmed that For All Mankind this season, it's an 8-year jump. I think this time around. But anyway, yeah, we can. I mean, we've news
out now.
We're in
news
now,
right? We're
news. It's confusing. It's confuzzling.
This is happening.
Okay, fine. Right, that is it with whatever the fuck section that was. Let's get on to the listener question.
Oh, we're not doing news.
Yeah, news comes. How long have we been doing this podcast for?
Oh. You've already got into news, so then Boyd said, let's do news.
Sorry. No, we're not going straight into news. I mean, look, there has to be some semblance of order on this podcast.
Again, I mean, just hypocrisy. Hypocrisy, so, thy name is James.
That's it. So we're going to have a listener question. This one comes from Rosie Newton Vanderberg. And Rosie says, having had Look for the Light from, she says, OMITB, in there, and I swear to God, I actually had to Google that before I found
Orange
out it was Only Murders in the Building.
Oh.
Orange is the New Black.
O-I-N-T-B.
No, that would be OMITB. And I was like, what the fuck is OMITB? Right. Only Murders in the Building. Mm. Stuck in my head ever since today. I just wondered what you guys thought was some of the best original songs in TV shows. Ones you actually listen to out of context. High contenders to me have to be Nothing Suits Me Like a Suit from How I Met Your Mother and Yeah, Sure, Whatever from The After Party. There you go.
Kate's got an interesting answer to this one.
First of all, can I just say, can you repeat the lady's name who messaged in?
Rosie.
No, full name.
I've deleted the message now, so
oh,
I can't.
Oh, James, no. So instant with deleting because she's got such a fantastic name. It sounds like a Jackie Collins character, a novel.
Oh yeah, no, yeah. It's good. Yeah, it's a multi-hyphenate surname.
Yeah, it's a really great name. Boyd's digging me up because when we got the text for this, and I was like, oh, I can't think. I'm very bad at the questions, as you know. And I was like, oh, can't think of anything. Then I opted for, because we went to the Succession event last night, which I'll talk about later.
Yes.
I was like, actually, you know what? The Succession main theme tune, which then Boyd was like, that's not a song. I was like, well, obviously it is a song. that is one that I am going to choose.
I have to side with Boydie. It's not a song.
Yeah. It is a song.
It's the theme tune to a show.
Yeah.
So wait,
if the question was, what is your favourite theme tune? Which we have of course answered that question, and the answer is Succession for sure.
Wait, so you're saying no songs used for theme tunes? They no longer exist as songs. They're not songs. They're just, what is it? Just a collection of sounds?
I mean, it's kind of like part of the score, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's the thing.
Okay, on that, you've got me on that.
It's not a song. It has no mute lyrics.
Okay, that doesn't. Yeah, that is also true. In that case,
I mean, make up your own lyrics. I'd love to hear it.
go on, right now. Give us off the cuff lyrics for Succession.
This is the we went to see the Succession writers last night doing their talk at the Royal Festival, which Kay got tickets for. So I'm very grateful. I acknowledge that.
Were you in the heat box?
No, we were very much not in the heat box. We just sat there watching it along with everyone else. But it was hosted by
Adam Buxton,
who was brilliant and very funny, obviously, in his own right. And he would have done, if he'd have been here now, he would have created lyrics for the theme tune and sung them.
He's a comedy genius, though.
Yeah,
right?
we're not comedy genii. Listeners, it's
well, we're talking about that.
I hate to break it to you, but we're not comedy geniuses.
Bombshell.
Yeah.
Can we just give a little shout out to Casper, who was a lovely TV podcast listener who came and said hi to us and was very excited for the event and was telling us how he'd just finished The Diplomat. So yeah, hi Casper.
It was great to meet Casper. But yeah, bottom line, it's not a fucking song.
Okay, yeah. In which case then, I just don't have an answer. I'm sorry.
Right. Kay has no answer this week. Boy, do you have an
outrageous
answer?
I do have an answer.
Go on, hit me with it.
Here's what I'm going to say to you. There's only one answer to this question.
Oh,
this is the answer.
You know, you often answer them with that particular statement.
You know every now and then.
Listeners, while he's saying this bold claim, he's also crossing his arms
in a really defensive, pompous
it's not defensive.
Way.
No, it's the opposite of defensive. It's
definitive. It's very authoritative.
Yeah, it's authoritative. I'm sure listeners will agree that when I do resort to saying there's only one answer, then generally, probably I'm right. I don't know.
Well, we'll be the judges.
Yeah, we will be the judges.
So what I'm going to say to you is, pretty girl on the hood of a Cadillac. She's broken down on Freeway 9.
Oh, yes.
I take a look and her engine started.
Free
I
love.
I leave her purring and I roll on by.
It's free love freeway. Bye.
Free love on the free love freeway. The love is free and the freeway's long. I got some hot love on the hot love freeway. Going home because my baby's gone. She's gone. Little while later, see a senorita. She's caught a flat trying to make it home. She says, poor for four, can you pump me up? I say, muchos gracias, adios, bye bye.
I'm disappointed you're not singing it, boy.
I know. I probably would have sung it, but now I'm feeling
I could have brought out my guitar, like we could have done the whole thing.
Beautiful.
For the next live.
Absolutely beautiful, yeah. But the lyrics are so funny when you actually get see them in full. Down on road, I see a cowboy crying, hey buddy, what can I do? He said, I led a good life, had about 1,000 women. I said, then why the tears? He said, because none of them was you. It's just genius. Genuinely brilliant song. And it's a fantastic melody. It's like it's supposed to be like a sub Bruce Springsteen thing that David Brent wrote. And I have to say, I've said this before, but I think the David Brent songs, not just this one, but there's the Princess Diana one, which is incredible as well. And then he did, for the film that he made much later on, he came up with loads of more songs which you can buy on the album. They are fucking incredible. As comedy song, in character comedy songs go,
yeah,
they are phenomenal. But Free Love Freeway
is absolutely a good answer.
Upsettingly, that may be the correct answer to this question.
I think so. Do you know what? That crossing of the arms, it was worth it.
Yeah.
It was justified. Exactly.
Yeah.
City Primeval.
Yeah.
That's a good answer. My answer to this, and obviously I have a long list of answers to this.
No, you can only choose one.
But if I were to choose only one, there can be only one. It would be All Along the Watchtower from Battlestar Galactica, which is the Bear McCreary version of. So it's not quite an original song, obviously.
It's not an original song.
It's not an original song. It's a Dylan song, and it's obviously Hendrix covered it as well. But
yeah.
The Bear McCreary one, like I listen to that quite a lot in isolation. Dear. I love it. Not only is it pivotal to the plot of Battlestar Galactica, but it's a really, really great piece of music. So I love that. So that would be mine. But
I'm not sure we'll allow it, but you know.
Some others that popped into my head, Smelly Cat from Friends, which obviously is kind of iconic, I would say. Do you remember Chocolate Salty Balls
from
South Park?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I had a single of that.
That was a big hit, yeah.
Yeah, it was massive.
Number one, I think.
In fact, speaking of hits, Tongue Tied from Red Dwarf, that was released as a single as well. Wow. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Dreadful.
Yeah.
But nevertheless.
Horrendous.
What else is there? Do you remember You All Everybody by Driveshaft in Lost? Lost!
Oh, God,
yeah.
Really? Oh, the band that thing is in.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, okay, what about A Little Bit of Lexus from Schitt's Creek? Did you watch that?
I don't know that.
I enjoyed that little ditty.
Oh, yeah, I remember, yeah.
And I'm not going to, I would never ever resort to singing Soft Kitty from from the Big Bang Theory. But I will say The Reigns of Castamere from Game of Thrones is a good one, because not only do the Nationals sing it at the end of the Red Wedding episode, but in the Purple Wedding episode, Sigur Rós are actually in the show playing Reigns of Castamere at the Purple Wedding.
Yeah, that's good.
Which is kind of cool. And I believe on the season 8 soundtrack, System of a Down, or the singer from System of a Down, does a cover of it on the end credits as well.
Yeah, but you've veered away a bit from the. I'm looking. I've still got the question. I haven't deleted it.
It's an original song.
Rosie Newton Vandenberg.
There you go.
What a fantastic name. And,
well, it's not. But your first question. It's not an original song. It's a Bob Dylan song covered by Bear.
Sure, but I made up for it with volume.
Yeah, if I can't have my Succession theme tune,
one step away from Kay's ridiculous answer.
Excuse me.
Ridiculous non-answer. She clearly states in her question.
Oh God.
The best original songs.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, some, half of your answers were correct, but the other half weren't.
Fine. The winner is Tongue Tied from Red Dwarf.
Oh, you're such a child. Tongue Tied from Red Dwarf.
Right, that was Something Approaching the Postbag. If you would like your question read out with love and appreciation on this podcast, or indeed on Pilot Plus, do send them to us either via DM on Twitter or Instagram at Pilot TV Pod, or to me directly at James C. Dyer. Shall we have the news section that we've kind of trailed a little bit already?
Bring it on.
All right.
Some news just broke, actually, on my phone.
News has broken.
It didn't break on my phone, but I got an email about it. So, yeah, it's exciting. It's Doctor Who news.
Mm, go on.
It's Doctor Who casting news. Miriam Margolyes is going to be voicing a key character.
Really?
In the specials.
Miriam Margolyes has been in the news quite a lot this week. I don't know if you've noticed.
Yes.
Yeah. She had a few things to say about your favourite star of Only Murders in the Building.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did she say? I missed her.
She may or may not have described him using a less popular word.
Ooh, what, Steve? Steve Martin.
Yeah.
What did she say?
She called him a massive C unit.
Ooh. Mm.
She said when she did Little Shop of Horrors with him, you know how Miriam Margolyes just gives no fucks whatsoever. Yeah. And I was incredible. Yep, Miriam Margolyes, you call it how you see it. I got a lot of respect for that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, she may or may not be. Maybe he was at the time, but he's clearly not now. He's clearly a lovely guy now. But yeah, she's going to be in Doctor Who, and she's voicing the character of the Meep, who is this furry thing you may or may not have seen.
Sounds cute.
Yeah. The Meep is like an iconic creature. It's from the comic strip, The Star Beast, that was in Doctor Who, the Doctor Who magazine, Doctor Who Monthly, years ago.
Did you used to get that magazine?
Yes. Yes. Oh. I should start getting it again, to be honest. I used to get it intermittently, because it is very useful and it's very good. And they've got a new editor. It's got a new editor, I believe, actually. Anyway, Miriam says, "I'm relieved I got to work on Doctor Who before I died. With sci-fi, you never know. Thank you for making an old woman very happy."
Oh, yeah. Bless her.
Yeah. Do you know, this is not even remotely connected to what you just said, but I went to a quiz last night, a TV-themed quiz. There were film questions in there as well. In fact, I talked about this in the Empire podcast, but I will say that there were a lot of TV questions.
You tweeted about it angrily as well.
I tweeted angrily about one of the questions. Yeah. That's absolutely true. And that's the thing that I talked about on Empire. But I will say, Boydie, thanks to you.
Yeah.
I was able to answer a football question correctly.
Wow.
Because I specifically asked what division Wrexham was in.
Brilliant.
And I can't say the answer on this podcast because I don't want to spoil season 2 of the show. But I was like, I know the answer to that.
That's good.
And I nailed it.
Oh, yeah. Brilliant.
It was amazing.
Fantastic. Chris Hewitt wasn't with you?
He was not there. No. But we came second in the quiz. By 1 point.
Oh, no.
Because one of the things they asked how many Kardashian grandchildren there were. And I was like, oh my God.
See, James, if you had me on your team.
How many of you, who was in the team?
It was me, Radio 1's Ali Plum. And a bunch of other people.
Well, you weren't representing Empire.
I was not representing Empire. I like to think I was representing Pilot TV as a force of one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. Other news.
Yes.
For me, the most exciting news of the week, other than all the other things I've said, the most exciting news of the week is that the Oscars have got a new TV home.
They do.
ITV. Who would have thought? Yes. ITV. I know. Yeah, be shocked. Everyone was shocked. I mentioned it. I put it on Twitter when ITV sent out the press release.
Have you already put out the feelers for you to be on the...
No, I'm waiting. I'm available, put it that way, in March next year when it'll be on. But yeah, I think it's brilliant news. ITV One and ITVX will be showing it live. And I'm sure they'll have loads of special programming surrounding it too. But it has been... It's been on Sky for as long as I can remember, and I have graced many a broadcast of it. But in recent years, they stopped, not only did they stop inviting me on, invited other people instead, which is,
travesty.
Of course, fine.
Absolute travesty.
But, I mean, the last couple of years, they haven't even had those bits in the American ad breaks where pundits, expert pundits, have talked about what's going on during the show. So it's ended up becoming kind of like, you know, Sky clearly kind of couldn't really be bothered with it. I mean, it does get, you know, a small number of viewers because it basically starts at 1 a.m, so it's never going to be a mass market proposition. But it's still, it's brilliant that I think Terrestrial is showing it, and I think that it makes it more of an event, and I think,
more accessible,
you know,
as well.
More accessible, literally, yeah. Everyone's got ITV, ITV1. So yeah, it's exciting.
Fingers crossed for a booking then.
Fingers crossed for booking as well, yeah.
Yeah.
Unless they get people who really know what they're talking about.
Oh, shut the front door, Boydo.
I was trying to think of like a snooty ITV gag that I could make around the Oscars.
Yes.
I couldn't think of one.
No.
Oh.
No.
I was really disappointed.
We're all disappointed in you.
You've let us all down.
Yeah, I have. I've let the side down terribly. It's awful. It's absolutely awful. There's not been a lot of news this week, I'm not going to lie. I don't know if it's because everyone is on strike and therefore nothing is being announced because nothing is being made. But across film and TV, there seems to have been a real lack of news this week.
I think there is some other news. Have you not got any more news?
I've got some news.
I don't have a lot. Okay. Good. Tell me what news do you have? I have very little.
The best news for me this week is that Portrait Artist of the Year, guys. Yeah.
Right.
Right.
So the new series will begin with a special Portrait Artist of the Decade episode, which will see the winners of past series return again to paint. Guess who, Boydo? Someone who I love, an iconic actress.
Dame Judi Dench.
Yes. Yeah. There's going to be a special 90-minute special.
Special 90-minute special.
He's such a shit as he came.
Sorry.
There's going to be a 90-minute special, which will be special to me, which will celebrate one of the world's most acclaimed actors and delve into the stories of the previous winners and their careers since they won. And I cannot wait. So that's all coming up. The 10th series starts on the 4th of October. And as always, it'll be hosted by Dame Joan Bakewell and Stephen Mangan.
Also, the BBC revealed...
Wait. Oh. What's your reaction to that? Aren't you happy?
Yeah, Boyd, react.
Yeah, come on.
I think it's great. Yeah, I'm excited. Very excited. It's a great show. Well, did our friend and former colleague win his year of
He got quite far. I think he got into the final.
Yeah. We were talking about Cliff Longbridge.
Yeah.
Our former colleague.
His real name is Chris Longbridge.
He used to work at Heat and now works at Digital Spy. Is he still Digital Spy?
We don't talk about Digital Spy.
Oh, sorry.
Because they won the quiz last night.
Oh, fuck. Oh, no. I bet it was Cliff was there.
Yeah, quite possibly.
Was there another bald man looking quite a lot like you there?
I don't know.
He does look
There were mirrors, so it was difficult to tell.
Oh, okay. Might have been you just looking in the mirror.
It could have been.
Yeah.
Okay.
I bet he was.
By one point. I bet he knew the Kardashians.
And he is very good at quizzes.
He's very good.
All right.
Yeah.
No, one of the questions they asked was, what was the month and year of the Colleen Rooney, Agatha Christie reveal?
Wow, that's a good
question.
Would
you have got it?
Oh, gosh. And the account is, it's Rebecca Vardy's account.
That's right. But when did it happen? Month and year?
I'm going to say, what year are we in now? 2023. Okay, I'm going to say it was 2020, I'm going to say, before the pandemic.
Okay.
And I'm just going to hazard a guess there. Oh, no, we were in the pandemic, March, wasn't it? March 2020. I'll say May 2020, even though we were in lockdown.
I was going to say May 2019.
Oh.
I'm going to say, I'm glad neither of you were on our team.
It was
October 2019.
Ah.
So Boyd would have got...
Close.
You'd have got 1 point.
Well, yeah,
you
weren't that close. No, I was close to
6 months away.
I said...
You were in the wrong year.
Yeah.
At least Boyd got 1 point.
So actually, if there's any math questions
like
as well, I really...
I have to keep in the pebble story now.
Oh my God. Oh my God, the pebble story was also awful. I don't know. My brain's a bit like mush today. Sorry. Okay. Yes, I would be no good on your team.
Yeah.
Were there too many like reality questions for your liking?
There were some National Geographic questions. It was a Disney Plus quiz.
Right.
So it spanned the whole gamut of like star shows, animated shows, films, National Geographic stuff. So, and obviously the Kardashians.
Because they've got the Colleen Rooney documentary.
Right, and that's why that was in there. So some of the stuff I was just like, this is not my wheelhouse at all. Others smashed it.
Did they ask questions about a murder at the end of the world?
Do you know what? They actually did.
Really?
There was actually a murder at the end of the world question, yes, which was what was the show's full title, which obviously I knew.
Right.
FX's A Murder at the End of the World.
Brilliant.
But there were a couple of Only Murders in the Buildings questions. I was absolutely lost there.
Yeah.
But,
don't you wish you'd zoned in?
Yeah, yeah. Maybe
if
listen to
properly listened to the spoiler specials.
Special rather than do
that
your
you
emails.
Yeah. Sit there looking at us glazed over.
So really, it is entirely my fault we didn't win, because had I listened, I would have known the answers. Therefore, we would have won because
we only
lost by 1 point. I can't remember.
Okay.
Sorry.
You were paying attention even at that.
I wasn't paying attention. Yeah, they said only murders. I zoned out immediately. They mentioned the show.
That's why
Cliff won.
Yeah, that's why. That's why it happened.
Good for you, Cliff.
Yeah. We were talking about news, weren't we?
Yeah. Did we finish your bit of news?
Oh, that was my only news. That's
there was
the most
news. BBC announced details of the news of Vigil.
Oh,
yeah.
The one that's about the submarine, but not on a submarine.
Exactly. Yeah. So Saran Jones and Rose Leslie are back, along with new cast members Romola Garai, Dougray Scott is joining the cast, and then revealed details of the storyline, basically. In this new investigation, Amy, Saran Jones, and Kirsten, Rose Leslie, look to the skies as they enter the secret world of drone warfare.
Wow.
So they've gone up.
They've gone up.
Down.
They've gone down. Now they're up. Right.
Basically, it's Vigil in the air.
Yeah.
So, following multiple deaths at a Scottish weapons test, Silver and Longacre got tasked with finding out the cause, entering the closed ranks of the Air Force in Scotland and the Middle East, basically. It's quite cunning.
But we did say, didn't we, that when the first series was on, we did say, actually, the relationship she has with Rose Leslie's character is so interesting that we'd happily watch more of this even without the submarine.
Yes. So we did say that.
But we get drones as well. A game of drones.
Very good.
Yeah. That's what this is.
Good. And the final news thing I was going to mention, as I know we can't bang on about it all day.
We actually because we don't have an interview this week, so we can keep going.
Okay. did you see that Bill Maher, the slightly annoying American,
not a fan,
political, satirical,
he's joining Drew Barrymore in Breaking the Strike.
He is breaking the strike. He's out and out breaking the writer's strike.
Well, he says he isn't because he's not using writers.
Well, yeah, but he's been told in no uncertain terms by the Writers Guild that
he has rejected that.
He has rejected it. But he said...
So what's he doing?
So he's
going to wing it.
He's going to do it. Basically, I'll say this is his quote. Real time is coming back. Unfortunately, sans writers or writing. It's been 5 months and it's time to bring people back to work. The writers have important issues I sympathise with and I hope they're addressed to their satisfaction, but they're not the only people with issues, problems and concerns. And he's talking about the below the line, you know, the crew, etc. But basically what he's doing is he's not going to do any of the pre-prepared written. So he does a monologue usually. He does a bit at the end where he kind of does comedy skit stuff. He's not doing any of that. He's just doing the interviews that he does live, you know, on the show. I mean, he is breaking this, you know, when you have a strike, this works for any situation, any strike around the world. The whole point is the people who strike and call the strike, the union, they tell you, if you're a member of the union, what you can and can't do. There are rules to it, because otherwise it breaks the whole point of it. And it's all right for him to make this grandiose statement. And he has, I'll give him this credit, I think he's out of his own pocket, he's paid some of his ongoing people who can't work. And that's great. James Corden did that with, you know, in America during COVID, when the show wasn't on air, he paid for the whole crew, as far as I'm aware, for months on end. Anyway, so Bill Maher's doing that. But you've just got to follow the rules. You are effectively being a scab if you don't follow the rules. And he is, I'm afraid. And, you know, I mean, I find Bill Maher's politics semi-objectionable anyway. But it's an interesting turn. And I'm still amazed. I mean, I said the other week how, you know, Brayson said on his podcast that he thought the strike was coming to an end. There's still no sign of it. It is incredible. It's still going on.
Oh, yeah. And it seems to be, I don't think it's ending anytime soon. So, no. Well, that was a downer.
Sorry.
So while we were recording, well, actually the previous podcast, if I'm honest with you, but the new trailer for Brie Larson's Apple TV Plus show, Lessons in Chemistry, dropped.
Oh, yeah.
I have not watched it. I can't tell you what it's like.
Nor right.
But this is a limited series, an adaptation of the Bonnie Garmoux novel. And she plays a brilliant... I'm saying... My name is probably Bonnie Garmus, but I'm saying Bonnie Garmoux because I thought it deserved a little bit of flourish.
Something gone very theatrical.
Garmoux. Yes, anyway, she plays a chemist called Elizabeth Zott, who inspired women through her cooking show. So it's Brie Larson making tasty treats, which I'd say is a great premise for a show.
Yeah, I'm into it.
Especially with a name and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you just got that, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. It's true. Okay, good. I don't imagine there's going to be... yes, thank you for that, Boyd. It's good that you were able to spell that joke out.
Yeah. In case you weren't aware.
Right, so that dropped as well. Is there Is there anything else? He says, no. Desperately like drawing it out.
I wanted to add something else because you thought it was too much of a downer that I was talking about the story.
Yeah, I wanted to end on a note.
We ended on that Brie joke. I think that's good enough.
Yeah.
Do you know, actually, going back to the quiz, there was actually a quiz. It was a Desperate Housewives question. And one of them was bonus points if you can name the housewife who's named after a cheese.
Oh. There you go.
I was like, really?
Gouda.
Okay. Yeah, it turns out it wasn't cheddar. Yeah. Anyway, that was something approximating news.
What would you have won if you'd have won the quiz, by the way?
There's a trophy, a little star-shaped trophy, and then there's a bag of goodies you get, which has stuff like a Funko and like a Guardians of the Galaxy stuffed toy in it. Although the winners were very kind enough to donate their Guardians of the Galaxy stuffed toy to me, which was lovely.
I genuinely thought that.
I've given it to charity.
I mean,
it's one in the same, really.
No.
Grown-up
to me.
James Dyer.
You made them feel so bad.
I was so upset that I didn't win, that they came over and gave me a stuffed toy.
He's literally a man-child.
Yeah, he's a man-child. He's so excited about getting this thing. He doesn't even remember who gave it to. It could have been Cliff with a bald head.
It was not Cliff.
James the Colic.
It was not
Cliff. By the way, his name isn't Cliff. His name is Chris, but the joke was that people just called him Cliff, by the way. So you
That's quite the joke.
I call him Cliff.
Well, that's Boyd was the
one. It's one of the great most long-running jokes of my career. I think you'll find.
Wow. That is a cliffhanger.
Very good.
What did you get anything for coming second?
We got to leave with scraps of our dignity clutched around us.
Mm. Well, you got those extra bonus points that you ponced off the winners.
Yeah, I there was one point where I actually threw down over a particular question that the quizmasters had got wrong.
I was that guy.
I was that guy. I'm not going to repeat it because I went over this on the Empire podcast. Suffice to say, it was an egregious error on their part.
Not the
I was
Indiana
not
Jones
having
one.
It. It was the Indiana Jones one. Yes. I was not happy.
That
about
is
that at
disgrace.
All.
I'm with you there.
Yeah, I was furious.
It's just embarrassing, though.
No, I'm in it to win it.
And yet you lost. So anyway, let's move on.
And yet we lost. Anyway, right, let's go on to this week's review section. First up this week, we have the triumphant return of Laurie Nunn's Sex Education on Netflix, which once again takes us to the fictional town of Moordale, where kids, you know, cycle to school through areas of outstanding natural beauty in this stunning countryside. They don't have to wear uniforms, and schools are kind of like these overfunded palaces of learning where students walk around with tablets around their necks. The final season, however, begins with Maeve in America, Otis and Eric starting at a new college, and a rival sex therapist entering the scene in the form of Thalia Graham's O. Kay, did this climax for Sex Education hit the G-spot?
Oh, God, so many words I don't want you ever to say. I don't want to hear those words out of your mouth. I refuse to engage with that, and I will just say I enjoyed this.
Fair enough.
I enjoyed this immensely. I really like this. I think it's really good because obviously we all know these characters and a lot of us are big fans of the show. And I think so what's happened, obviously Moordale, did it close at the end of the last series? Or was it
well, it all
that?
Went tits up, didn't it? With the new headmistress and it turned into like a conservative, you know, blazer wearing school. And then they staged a sex protest at the end.
Yeah, that's it. Anyway, so the majority of them have all moved to Cavendish College, except for, as you say, Maeve, who's in America, and some of the other regulars have gone now. So like,
some of the other regulars who've just told her they don't want to be in the show anymore, yes.
Yeah, so for example, Olivia, Simone Ashley, has gone to a different college, so we won't see her. But also, notably, Adam, played by Connor Swindles, has dropped out.
He has.
So he's no longer there.
But he's in the show.
He's in the show.
Crucially.
He's still pining for Eric, so that's good. Our favourite, my favourite. But the majority of them are going to Cavendish College, and it is super, like, it's very progressive and modern, and, like, it's all about sound baths and yoga. You'd love it, James. There's a no-gossip policy, which Eric struggles with.
No school has ever existed like this.
But, I mean, to be
they
fair...
They have a slide.
They have a slide. They have a slide.
Yeah.
To be fair, I am down with a slide.
Yeah,
I would love
a slide
into the studio.
Well, champion of change, Kay, you could have sorted that
yeah,
out.
You can make that out. Yeah, we want to slide in the office.
Enough.
Our office. Mm. Yeah.
We've got the budget for that. So they're there. So it's a big adjustment for this new college and the way they operate. Also, Mr. Groff is there. So he's no longer a head teacher. He's there as a supply teacher. He can't get his head around, you know, the new way of teaching and working and like the technology. So, you know, we kind of see him, his like journey with that as well. But most notably, so what I really like about this is that I love Sex Education, but it's good to freshen it up. And actually, this has been the perfect way of doing it, right? Yeah. So we've got new scenery, new characters and new dynamics, as well as the old characters that we love and seeing how they're coping with that. Most notably, Osis is struggling with the fact that he's in this long-distance relationship with Maeve and it's trying to keep that connection going. There's some cringe. I've only watched the first episode because I'm really trying not to like devour this. But in the first episode, there's like this cringe-worthy sexting escapade, which is like, oh my god, it's just so awkward. Which, he struggles to deliver the goods, shall we say?
He crucially breaks the cardinal rule of sexting, which is that if one is sent one, you have to acknowledge it, presumably. Like, that's a thing, right?
Oh, my God. What you can't do is start dicking around half writing a message and then deleting it so the person sees there's a dot.
And then you don't reply.
That's the worst thing you can do.
That can't be a thing.
So that's all going on. Ruby, played by Mimi Keane, she's also like struggling with the fact that she's no longer top dog and all her little posse is gone. And she instantly sort of like locks horns with Abby, played by Anthony Lexa, who is sort of like the main person there. And so there's all that going on. What else? Most importantly, Otis tries to set up his therapy counselling sessions again, but he encounters a rival there at the new college called O, who is not pleased that he is trying to steal her clients. And so they enter into a bit of a war about that. So, oh my God. And of course, like Gillian Anderson, the brilliant Gillian Anderson, is a new mum now to baby Joy. And she is struggling, Jean, she's struggling to balance motherhood with the fact that she wants to get a new job as a radio presenter of a new sex show. And Otis is sleep deprived because of the baby. And it's like, it's all that kind of dynamic of how they're making it work. So I just really, I mean, it's got all this great news stuff about it, like the school and these dynamics and the rivalries, but also all the stuff that we loved about it. So the incredible sex montages.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Aren't they great? And the warmth and the humour, it's all there. And it's just been elevated, I think, by the changes.
You mentioned that Jean gets a job on the radio. Mm. And her boss is Boydie.
Who's her boss?
Hannah Gadsby.
Oh, Hannah Gadsby. Yes, sorry.
Hannah Gadsby.
Oh, I mentioned this last week. Yeah, Hannah Gadsby.
Amazing.
Absolutely. Brilliant, yeah.
And I will say, I think it might be in episode 2, and I'm going to be very vague because we don't want to have any spoilers in this, but let's say there is a PowerPoint mishap.
Yes.
But my friend Chimon was off the chat. I was
horrendous.
Curled up in a ball on the floor, but then laughing so uncontrollably in the most awkward fashion. It was so funny because, as everything with this show, it never does anything by half measures. Like, it does it. It goes, and just when you think it can't get any worse, it gets so much worse.
Oh my God, it was
so excruciating.
Horrendous. Also, you could see how that would happen.
I know. And just when you think it's over, it gets worse. Yeah. And I have to say, the actors involved played it beautifully, mm-hmm. and it is genius. And the thing with Laurie Nunn, and I think that what the secret to this show, why this show is so good, is it walks this incredible line between being kind of bawdy and outrageous and sexy and goofy and funny, but also really poignant and mm-hmm. touching. And it feels really emotionally resonant when you go through it. And I think it's such a great show because you feel so deeply for these characters, but it's also ridiculously funny and has loads of like dick jokes in it. Like
it strikes the right balance.
It does. It strikes a perfect balance that I don't think I've ever seen anyone do it as well before. I really don't. Like it's masterful writing, brilliant casting. I mean, it's just made everything about this show works. Like all the actors are perfect. And just the idea of this school, because what's really interesting is the same with Mordale High and now with this college, is like it almost takes place in this weird altered fantasy world. Mm. Because schools aren't like this, people aren't like this. Like, as we've said before, it's so effortlessly inclusive of queer characters. There are a lot of trans characters in this season as well.
It's super diverse.
Diverse, but in a kind of zero fucks given kind of way where they don't even necessarily even draw attention to it, let alone make a big deal out of it. So it almost takes place in this weird progressive utopia where everyone's super nice and accepting and no one has to wear school uniform and all schools, as we've said, have enormous unlimited budgets. But it's just, there's something about the show that's glorious.
But the really clever thing they've done with this season, because I think it was in danger or it is in danger, this show. And I love it. I absolutely love it. And I don't know how Kay can stop watching one episode. I mean, that is just...
Neither do I. It's the most bingeable show alive.
I can't do that.
Yeah. I went through 5 in one sitting. Oh, so.
I went through 7 in one sitting.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Again, the competition between you two.
Yeah. But what it's...
Sex head measuring.
Exactly. Could we have our own overhead projector?
Oh, God.
Absolutely not.
Steady. What I think the genius thing they've done is, because I think it is... One of the dangers of the show is, because as you say, with the ultra diverse casting and it deals with so many issues in every single episode.
Yeah.
Gender, sexuality, bullying, depression,
sexual assault, eating difficulties, like self-examination,
grief,
everything.
Mm. Right.
Postnatal depression.
Right. And yet, it's ostensibly a comedy.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's really funny.
It's really funny. But what I was going to say, I think the genius of this final season is because it is set, this school is so amusingly woke.
Yes, it is.
It takes the piss out of that. And it's so they're brilliantly, so a lot of the characters who are unbelievable, and I'm using the word woke in quotes because I don't use woke as a pejorative thing.
Oh, yeah.
But what they brilliantly do is they do tap into the wokeness, again, I'm using that in quotes, of this generation. And they do make fun of it. And that's brilliant.
But it's poking fun warmly,
isn't it? No, completely. Yeah. Well, it varies. It varies. There are characters in it. Okay, so I'm not going to spoil. There are characters in it who start off thinking, they're a really nice woke person, and they have really big, deep flaws that get exposed as it goes along. And that's really... clever, I think, because there every now and then, I think the one flaw in the show is sometimes it is utopian, as you say, and it's a bit unbelievable. But actually, there's a sharpness, I feel, to this season that's even more pointed about that element of it than it has been in the past. Because I think there's an awareness, I feel like, in the writer's room that it could sink into kind of utopianness about people. And they're not. It's very clear-eyed about what people can... Someone you might judge as being kind of not particularly bothered about wokeness might be a better person at heart than someone who seems to be completely woke.
It addresses the sort of hypocrisy of liberal-minded people, because there is oftentimes with liberals, and I speak as a liberal, there is a moral smugness and superiority about
smugness,
it.
Smugness, you.
Yes, indeed. But I think it's quite interesting that, as you say, they do skewer that slightly. And it's like, you may be very right on with all this stuff, but you can still be a twat. Yeah,
exactly. Mm. It's really clever. And the stuff about, I mean, in your account of all the things that are going on, the Dan Levy situation with Maeve.
Oh God, yeah.
Oh my God,
I believe him.
Yeah, there's a lot to. Yeah, it covers so much. Again,
her writing tutor in America.
Yeah, so skillfully they weave in all the different subplots. But the big thing that's happening with Maeve is she's doing a writing course in America with this writer called Thomas Miller, played by Dan Levy. I took a writing course in an American university.
Did you?
Yeah.
Which
and
university?
With the University of Massachusetts Amherst. And it's so clever what they've done with his character and what she goes through in that storyline. Goes all the way through the series. It's brilliant.
Is it very realistic?
Oh my God, yes. Yeah.
And particularly his character. And again, I'm looking at, you know, like a kind of this great figure, he's supposed to be, you know, a very successful writer, blah, blah, blah. But he is brilliant. And the character is so well, it's clearly been written someone who's had that experience because it's so clever.
Is it like, God, what's his name in The Affair? Noah Duda.
No, actually more nuanced than that, really.
Okay.
Yeah, but anyway, it's fantastic. And you know what? Even among this cast, like Thady Graham is brilliant as the new character, the rival sex therapist.
Because she has a very passive-aggressive, again, smugness to her.
Yeah.
She does that brilliantly.
Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. I want to mention, there's so many people to mention because the cast is fucking huge.
Yeah,
but
it has a very deep
bench. There are certain people I wanted to pick out. Cader Williams-Sterling, who's that one former head boy, you know, the brilliant swimmer with the two mothers.
Yeah, Jackson.
Yeah, Jackson. He is fantastic. And his storyline with his friend, with his best friend, is really interesting and moving and brilliantly performed. But you know, even among everyone in the cast is great. But I do think the MVP, my MVP of the whole thing,
tell me,
is Gillian Anderson. Mm. I think she's incredible in this.
She is.
And her character's storyline is really moving.
And different. Very different from what she's done before.
Yeah, and difficult. She really has to negotiate, I think, some really tough stuff in this series.
Oh, God, okay, maybe I need to watch more.
I will say, though, in episode two, there is an upsetting ejaculation sequence.
Oh, my God, yeah. There really is, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Again, another word I don't want to hear.
Phrases you didn't expect here, upsetting ejaculation scene from James. But Gillian Anderson, honestly, she is fucking brilliant. She deserves a BAFTA for this. I don't know if I can't even watch
it. She deserves everything. Yeah,
her performance is astonishing, I think. She's just brilliantly subtle, nuanced, and and incredibly emotional. She just does it fantastically.
Genius, a ledge.
Yeah. So it's an amazing show. And the final thing I was going to say was the people who find wokeness offensive are those people.
Oh my God!
I want
a reality show where Piers Morgan and Lawrence basically. Fox are on Gogglebox watching this show.
Exactly. Yeah. But what's brilliant about it is it shows you that the proper true definition of wokeness, which is an awareness of people's, power struggle situations and of racism and sexism and all of that, is it does address all that, but it does it brilliantly. Oh, I haven't even finished yet. Shooty Gatwa. We have really.
Oh,
I mean,
my God. Shooty.
He has a really interesting storyline as well. They've done a really good job. And I genuinely got up to episode 7, so there's only got the final to come, which they haven't given us yet.
They've given me.
Unbelievable.
I win the measuring competition.
Episode 7, do you say?
Episode 8.
So if you've watched the finale,
I can either confirm or deny.
Well, I think anything could happen in that finale because there's so many things set up. There's so many storylines.
Who's your favourite character?
Do you know what? I would really struggle to answer that question. I think they are all fantastic. Just pick one. Yeah. I think Maeve is a great character. I think I think her arc all the way through is really, really good. But actually, Jean is another one up there. Mm. And Eric as well.
And
Otis is kind of like, he almost doesn't stand out as much as so many of their characters. But it's a really, really really great, precisely pitched performance from Asa Butterfield. So, genuinely.
And that core Eric-Otis friendship is fantastic. It's and so brilliantly.
I do love their cycles to school through this lush forest with the trees and this sort of wonderful foliage. Like, where do you live?
Is it filmed in Wales?
I don't know where it's filmed, actually. Moordale's obviously a fictional place, but I don't know where it's supposed to be. But again, it feels like it's this weird, altered...
I think we need to do a road trip.
Bucolic English fantasy. It's extraordinary. But I genuinely... So, Sex Education, in terms of great comedies, one of my favourite comedies of all time, I would say. I genuinely love it that much.
And we know how much you love comedy.
And you know how much I love comedy. So, I think...
It is brilliant. It's definitely one of the best things. It's definitely one of the best things Netflix.
Without a doubt. Yeah. Without a doubt. It's magnificent. So, it's a shame we're having to say goodbye to it. But at least it goes out with a bang.
Literally.
Okay, that's Sex Education, which drops on Netflix on Friday.
No, Thursday.
I'm leaving that in.
Can I just say how satisfying that was for Boyd? Yeah.
It's true.
After all, you're trying to pip him to the post about watching the finale.
I will say that Boyd, clearly saw that coming in the expression on his face. Yeah. And he went, nope, Thursday. Yeah. And then took a drink. And then took a drink in celebration.
He swigged his Oasis smuggling.
Still haven't seen episode 8 of Sex Education. Are you sure you've been sent?
Oh, yes. I am 100% sure.
Girl, you're going to have to complain about
that. What's happening,
Boyd?
What the fuck is happening? It's a good question.
I'm going to carry out an investigation for you. Thank you.
Anyway, next up we have Still Up, which is another comedy, in fact. It's a new Apple comedy, and it's about a pair of insomniacs, played by Antonia Thomas and Craig Roberts, who talk to each other into the wee hours when neither of them can catch some shut-eye. So, Boydie, was this enough to keep you up last night?
Interesting. This is created by Steve Burge and Natalie Walter, who are genuine. I was reading insomniacs, and they came up with the idea of building a rom-com around the idea of insomnia. And it starts, as you said, Antonia Thomas and Craig Roberts. I'm a big fan of Craig Roberts. I think he's a really talented.
What's he been in?
Funny guy. Now I'm going to have to check what he's been in.
Sorry.
I've forgotten. He was in Submarine. Submarine was the film that made him a star. He also became a director and et cetera. He's very good, very talented, very Welsh.
Like Jenna Coleman.
Oh, yeah. I was just about to say, I was trying to remember who James got fixated on.
That's right.
With the Welsh accent.
Yeah, he really is Welsh, though. Pretty proper.
He's not from Blackpool.
No, he's not from Blackpool.
Bloody Blackpool. I'm not dissing Blackpool. It's just James was, again, obsessed with Blackpool.
Yeah. So this is one of those shows where the premise is part, and the format of the show is kind of intrinsic to whether or not you go with it. Or do you know what I mean? So that it's not just, it's not a freewheeling rom-com like some of the others we might have watched recently, where it just so happens that each of the main characters is insomniac, and that's what they have in common. It uses the insomnia. Mm. In his case, Craig Roberts' character doesn't even leave his flat.
Yeah.
So he's completely flat-bound, homebound, and has insomnia. So he's staying up all night on his own in his thing, dealing with pizza delivery people, his weird neighbour who's got obsessed with the cats.
Obsessed with his cats.
Meanwhile, Antonia Thomas's character, Lisa, she does go out and about at least, but the whole premise is that we're watching them have their nightly conversations that they have with each other to kind of help each other with their, with the insomnia. So it's almost, it's like a kind of, you know, it's not, it's got this kind of format point, almost like, say, you know, certain comedies, like The Royal Family, in a way, we're going to do, you know, Caroline and her and Craig Cash, when they invented that legendary show, they were like, it's literally going to be a family sitting around watching TV. You know, so there's the limitation imposed on it. And this has its own limitations imposed on it as part of the whole creative idea, which I found interesting. So I think that is interesting. But the danger of that, and I think this show possibly slips into this, is that it feels a bit claustrophobic. And you have to work out ways of making it believable and plausible. For example, in the first episode, while he's at home dealing with pizza delivery and his neighbour, etc., she's out in this seemingly 24-hour open chemist but version of Boots.
Yeah.
And you're like, how is that? How is this happening? I was like, you know, how could she just wander around doing what the fuck she wants to do? And then in the second episode, I watched another episode, I was thinking, okay, I'm going to just carry on watching it, seeing with how they deal with this, its own format and its own limitations. And in episode two, she's on a bus while he's in his flat, and she's kind of like, she kind of tells these people to shut up, and one of them, they steal her dress. And I was like, that's quite a bold, big thing to try and do in this comedy that's restricting itself by having these rules of what we're going to see. So we don't just see scenes from their lives. It uses flashbacks and everything to make it seem slightly less claustrophobic. It's quite a challenge. It's set for itself, is all I would say. And I'm not sure it necessarily succeeds all the time. I liked it. I kind of liked it. I thought I liked the characters. I liked their banter with each other. I thought some of it was well written. And, you know, it's not that funny, but it's kind of amusing.
It's amusing. It's amusing.
And the stuff with the dress, even though it's wildly implausible, I thought it was wildly implausible what happens in the second episode on the bus, it still was quite funny and unpredictable and unusual. But it's hard. I think the writers have set themselves a pretty hard task, and I'm pretty... So the other Big Apple homegrown comedy is that one with the couple trying to find the kid.
Trying,
which I love. So Trying, I think, is an example of a British comedy about a relationship and issue, which just deals with it brilliantly. And that's a very funny, nuanced, lovable show. I think this limitations that the writers put on themselves, this show doesn't, makes this a much harder ask.
Sorry, James. I see what you're saying. However, I think because the insomnia aspect of it, I think does lend itself to, like, I mean, they can mine a lot of humour out of that, right? Because mad shit does happen late at night. So actually, it's true though, isn't it? Anyone who's got the night bus home, like, obviously, you know, the dress thing is a stretch, but oh my God, anyone who's got on the last bus home,
sure,
you see things, you experience things you never in your wildest dream would think could happen. Yeah. So actually, I think the premise of, you know, they're both up really late at night during the wee hours when really crazy stuff can happen, and you'd say and do stuff that you wouldn't ordinarily say and do if you had A, slept really well, and B, it was during the day. I think that's quite interesting. So I think it's like a interesting concept and premise. However, like, for me, I didn't find it funny enough. I didn't sense... So the whole thing is, Danny, he is single, and as Boyd sort of alluded to, I think he's sort of like seemingly agoraphobic. And he is reluctant to get into the online dating thing. She tries to encourage him. They're best friends. She's got a young daughter and is currently seeing a character called Veggie.
Blake Harrison. Former in-betweener.
Yeah, so he's incredibly boring but dependable and nice. And so she's in a relationship, he's not. And the implication is that there's this sort of like, maybe will they, won't they, you know, this is a rom-com. The other thing that I struggled with is that I just didn't sense the chemistry between them. So I think overall, interesting premise, with or without the limitation, with the limitations actually. But I think at a time when we're in a really good spell with like rom-coms, so we've got The Lovers on Sky Atlantic, we've got Starstruck BBC, I think this compares unfavorably to them.
Harsh. But I get what you're saying. I think what they've done is make it so that it's one of these things. It's like say, right, we're going to do something. We're going to do it with our hands tied behind our back and standing on one leg. And that feels a little bit exactly as you said, what they've done here, because they've engineered a situation where the writing has to be so consistently razor sharp.
Yeah.
Because there is nothing else to fall back on. You've got no situations. It's all down to dialogue, right? The dialogue has to be on point. And I would say, it's really good about 75% of the time. I think it's actually, they've done a really good job with it. I don't think it's consistently, I think there are points where you're like, okay, this bit, the dialogue hasn't quite worked and there is nothing else to distract us, so we're very aware of it. But I think the two central performances, I think Antonia Thomas and Craig Roberts, are both really expressive and really sort of sensitive in the way they deliver the dialogue. And actually, I think they do a lot of the heavy lifting here. And actually, I found them really likable, and I really, really bought into the intimacy they have, which is essentially they only talk on the phone, but there's a real emotional intimacy to it. And there's a bit where he talks about, he's, well, I do know you because of this. And you get the impression that he knows her far better than her partner does. Like there's real connection there because they share their most intimate secrets at, the cuckoo bong hours of the night, and they share this condition. And I think the stuff that didn't quite work for me was the slightly stupider stuff. So the neighbor who's having a birthday party for his cat in the middle of the night. And it's just like, I mean, that's just quirky and weird.
He was very much the guy from Friday Night Dinner.
I could have lost.
Jim.
Yeah, I could have lost that. But I enjoyed all the pharmacy fun. Like that I found quite entertaining. And I really enjoyed the conversation I had. I liked it.
So with the pharmacy, that's interesting you mentioned that because that's it lost me.
I like the pharmacy stuff.
When she pretends to be working there, I was like, really? And I know it's a real fine line between it, because it's funny that she's doing that.
Yes.
But really?
It's not realistic.
Like, it's unrealistic. But, and there was another moment that lost me, because you're absolutely right, totally right, that it is so reliant on the dialogue being great because of those imitations. So there's the bit where when she gets on the bus and he sends her, the boyfriend who has his YouTube channel in which he talks about implements for unboxing stuff, which is a clever joke. That's funny. And she's watching it. He sends her the video and she's watching it on her phone without her headphones in, so that the obnoxious people at the back of the bus hear what he's saying and they might take the piss. Then later on, she puts her fucking headphones on. And I'm like, I know it's a little detail but you wouldn't not have your headphones on, especially if you've got fucking headphones. It just doesn't make any sense. So little moments like that. But it was to your point, you have to be so careful because those little moments are going to lose you. Whereas if that's just in the morass of a whole big load of stuff happening, but it's so focused and acutely focused on those two characters and their dialogue, that the merest moment where it seems implausible kind of like takes you out of it. Mm. That's my long-winded point.
Yes. Yeah. I think you're right. I think it's got a lot of potential. I really do. And I think that, if they can keep the writing at a consistent level throughout, I think the performances will carry it. But yeah, it's a dangerous game to play, this kind of show. Like, you really are setting the bar very, very high for yourself. It's tricky, but yeah, I rather enjoyed her. Still Up, which lands on a day on Apple TV Plus. I'm not going to say which day because Boy will undoubtedly correct me.
I'll guess. Is it Friday the 22nd?
It is.
I wasn't going to guess that.
Apple's getting confusing now because a lot of their long dramas are coming out on Wednesday.
Yeah.
And the half-hour comedy is on a Friday.
But wasn't that the opposite of what Netflix did?
No, but it's the opposite of what they were doing as well. Apple started.
So confusing.
I think it's good. Mix it up. Why do they have
keep
to
keep exciting?
Be like, so,
don't be predictable. Yeah, okay. Finally this week, we have Juice, which you actually heard about on our 250th live show. So this one is written by Mohan Rizwan and stars both he and Naban Rizwan, as well as friend of the Boyd, Russell Tovey. Now, clearly Boyd cannot possibly be impartial, so it falls to Kay to tell us about this one.
Outrageous.
Let Boyd do it.
No, come on.
Okay,
no.
Fine.
Kay, did the Rizwans bring the juice
with
this comedy series?
Again, enough with this, James. What's wrong with you today?
Never, never.
Yes, they did, in spades. So, I mean, anyone who came to the Pilot TV live event or have listened to that episode, you'll know a bit about it already, but Moan plays a gay Asian guy. He's living in London, and he works for a ad agency. Is it an ad agency? Marketing ads?
It's kind of like marketing slash advertising slash market research kind of thing. Yeah,
it's a bit of everything, isn't it?
It is a bit of everything, yeah. It's an agency.
And he's very like fun-loving and exuberant, and he's the life and soul. We all know those kind of characters in The Office. And he is going out with a guy, literally called Guy, played by Russell Tovey, who is the sort of polar opposite of him. So he's very sensible and grounded. He's a counsellor. And they have actually a very sweet relationship, but they are very different. And he's joined by his brother, Naban, who plays Isaac, who comes to the company and basically ends up getting a job, which irritates Jarma no end, because he's like used to being the top dog at the agency, and he's like furious. And what I love about this is that it feels fresh and very funny, and like, you know, the performances are great. And also we should mention that their mum is in this as well, Frida, who plays the boy's mum. And the characters are just so well drawn and like are just brilliant. But also there's these sort of, what would you call them, fantasy sequences, mm-hmm. where Jarma's innermost thoughts, and especially when he's anxious and he's like in a heightened state of emotion, they are played out in really visually stimulating, surreal kind of sequences that are just so exciting to watch. There are so many key moments where things happen that we can't necessarily, we don't want to reveal, but like they are just so extraordinary. You think, when I was watching it, I was so blown away by the whole thing. I was just like, I find this pilot very exciting and I can't wait to watch the rest of the episodes. But part of me was like, fuck you. Like, how can you think of these amazing things? Like, how did you come up with that as a concept? And like, just, and the way it's like been executed is so well done.
He has been working on it for 5 years.
Well, I mean,
yeah, I'm just saying
he still had to have the idea.
Yeah,
right?
Gotcha. Yeah.
God, look at Boyd dismissing it like that.
No. I'm saying it took. That's what happens. It takes to work out this original show. It takes time.
It's so
that was
innovative.
The opposite of my point. I was saying it took them 5 years because that's how long it takes.
Well,
to perfect
it's
it.
5 years well spent, because I think this is a fantastic pilot, and I just think it completely delivers. And also, just as a side note, I just really love seeing big, bold, really good Asian characters on TV. I know I always bang on about this, but there aren't enough. And to have one that's legitimately funny, the acting's great, and just these characters that I think people grow to love, is only a good thing.
Boydie, what is your objective, entirely impartial view of the show starring your close personal friend, Russell Tovey?
Well, I did go to the launch screening of it,
did you host it?
No, I didn't host it. No, it was hosted by someone else. Fair enough. I mean, I'm not bitter. I sat with Russell T. Davis, funny enough, and I sat next to Russell, and so I was like with my two favourite Russells, Tovey and T. Davis. We were bowled over. They showed 3 episodes.
Oh, you're so lucky.
Which is quite unusual for a screening. That's an hour and a half, essentially. You know, feature length, if you like. But the reason I think they did that is because you really gets quite like for that first episode. I agree with you, it's incredibly inventive and it feels so fresh and ambitious because of these fantastic flights of fancy that you referred to. But then as it goes on, there's more, it really takes some interesting stuff, like their parents, the relationship between the parents is fascinating, the real mum is astonishingly good and intriguing. And there's a whole scene in a restaurant where when Russell Tovey's character meets the family that is astonishing.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah, that's kind of up there. I know it's a big claim, I'm going to say it anyway, with the Fleabag restaurant.
Really?
That is a big claim.
There's a Fleabagian quality to it, I think. And I think that's why they got as far as, I think that is the third episode, because the second episode deals with other stuff. And
I'm excited about that, because not only will it be exciting to see, you know, obviously Russell Tovey meeting the family, because that's going to be awkward and especially, you know, but with the Flights of Fancy as well.
Absolutely, exactly. Yeah, and those Flights of Fancy get more extraordinary, really,
as it goes on.
So it's really ambitious. I mean, also, you have to bear in mind, this is a BBC 3 budget. This is not a big budget show, but they just do it brilliantly. It's not CGI. It's all, what's the word? The opposite of CGI. You know,
practical.
It's all practical effects. Thank you. So it's been really meticulous. That's why I think it took the 5 years, because it has been meticulously worked out. And he's mining his own life as well. You know, he's completely unapologetically or unashamedly. Yes, you know, a lot of this is based on himself, his actual real boyfriend who was at the screening, by the way, his real mum, obviously she's in it. You know, it's all but he turns it into the stuff of like comedy gold. It's brilliant. And as for Russell Tovey, who yes is my friend, but I think he's just so brilliant that he's playing quite a staid the older guy. I mean, you know, this is that I'm remembering watching him in Being Human when he was a little guy with big ears who was like practically felt like a teenager. Mate. Now he's like playing the older man with wearing, you know, like
still very cute. FYI,
it looks great. Obviously, very handsome, but he's wearing sober clothing, and like it's a bit of the daddy figure. Let's face it, in this relationship. Oh, episode. That's what I was going to say. Episode opens with a hilarious Malcolm and Wise tribute. You remember the classic Malcolm and Wise sketch where they cook breakfast together, and it's like a musical number where they're kind of cooking, making the toast, and they do a brilliant visual reminder of that, tribute to that, which works really well. It's just really inventive, and he's everyone in it is brilliant. Russell's having a brilliant time. You know how I think he said this at our event, but he said it again at the launch event, the Q&A that I went to. Mawan Rizwan, he literally just DM'd Russell on Twitter and said, "Can you be in my sitcom?" And he was like, "Yeah." Russell had seen his show, I think, in Edinburgh, like ages ago. But he literally DM'd him, and that's how he was cast.
Mawan's got this maverick vibe that I'm very much down for.
Yeah, absolutely. So I do think, I am completely biased, but I think it's an extraordinary triumph.
No, this is a treat. This really is.
Yeah, it's James. Very, very, very inventive. And actually, it's like nothing you've ever seen really before, because it has its own unique flavour to it, which I really appreciated. Some of the comedy landed with me, some of it didn't, but that's par for the course with me, unfortunately. But I liked it. I did like it a lot. I thought it was funny. There's a lot of coat-based humour in the first episode, which tickled me slightly. And some of the flights of fancies are a little bit throwaway, and I didn't see the point of them. Some of them were a bit weird and actually really interesting, and some of them were quite almost shocking. Mm-hmm. And oh my God, what is happening? And they keep you successfully on the back foot, I think, all the way through, because you're not quite sure where it's going to go next. At no point are you thinking, well, I know exactly where this... I had no clue where this was going from one minute to the next, which is actually really nice for a show like this. And I thought they played it brilliantly, all of them. So, yeah, I enjoyed this a lot more than I thought I would.
I love this.
Yeah, it's a shame I didn't show a clip of it at the podcast.
That is true. We should have done that.
Boydo, at the next, time, we didn't even realise we could, and then until James, you know...
Oh, yeah, that's true. Blame on James. Yeah.
That is true. I withheld the fact that I had control over the AV. Sorry.
Totally did,
Juice is on BBC...
Three.
Monday.
10 p.m. It's also all available on the iPlayer, of course, from the very same day.
The juice is loose. Episodes,
yeah.
On the iPlayer.
And I think it's on BBC One later in the week as well.
Else is out this week, Boyd Minster?
It's a big week, isn't it? Because you've got the uncontroversial The Continental from the world of John Wick.
That's right, which we'll be reviewing on Pilot Plus on Thursday.
That starts on Friday on Prime Video. There is... What else is there? Oh, Neighbours is back today, Monday. The free Amazon Freevee revival of Neighbours, which you can read all about in the current issue of Heat Magazine, Kay, as I'm sure you're aware.
Mm-hmm. Crime, boy, I don't know.
Yes, Irvin Welsh's Crime is back on ITVX Thursday. Did you watch? Did we review season one?
I believe we did.
I think
we
did. Yeah, it's quite out there for a crime thing, as you'd expect from Irvin Welsh.
Yeah.
Season two of Minx.
Yep.
Which is the one with Ophelia Lovibond as the woman who runs the adult magazine with men, naked men in it.
Yep.
What are you grinning at, Kate?
You said naked men, and Kate started tittering.
Some reason I can handle it when Boyd says
titty
it.
Titty not.
Oh, no.
That's it. You've lost her. No. That's it.
No.
Cross the line.
That crossed the line. Apple TV Plus has got a Supermodels documentary series that I'm quite excited about. Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. Campbell, Crawford, Evangelista, Turlington.
All the greats.
James will definitely be watching that.
No.
I think that is about it, but I may have forgotten something. Sorry.
What is our pick of the week?
Right. I'm going to buck the trend because I know you're going to go, both of you, probably for Sex Education. I am backing Juice.
Well, I'm going to back Juice as well, obviously, But
yet the best show is still Sex Education.
Is brilliant.
Sex Education is obviously fantastic, but I just love everything that Juice is doing, and I just like that it's fresh, right? So
It is fresh juice.
Freshly squeezed.
Yeah.
Oh, God. You and your voices today. It's weird, isn't it?
He makes everything feel uncomfortable. A little bit. Everything he says at the moment. It's either like a reference to last week's boob gate. But anyway.
Oh, Good times. Okay, fine. Well, that was this particular podcast in one manner or another.
I feel like I want to go and have a shower or something. Mm. Just kidding. Yeah. What is this off me, so to speak?
If you did enjoy the podcast, please. Now, we've not had some exciting reviews in a while. I would like to have some more reviews.
Oh my gosh,
Give us some more stars or Kay will come for you.
Hmm. Yes. Do you know what? I actually agree with James on that because I just had a look and I've got some devastating news.
What? The Fijians have abandoned us.
We're completely out of the charts.
We're out of Fiji.
Oh, God. It's because they're probably busy watching the Rugby World Cup, which Fiji is at the moment. Yeah.
Can't they multitask? Okay, yeah, but we have come to a standstill on the review front.
Right.
And so I'm petitioning. Please, if you haven't left a review, in fact, I should have asked Casper last night when we saw him. Well, he might have felt a bit harangued.
Yeah, I was surprised you didn't. I forgot as he
walked off and I thought, oh, shh. Casper, if you're listening, please leave us a review.
I've been monitoring the reviews. And Sarah Phelps, I'm reasonably certain your review has not emerged.
No.
So, Phelpsy. Just saying.
Please, even if you want to leave a review and just want to slag off James for his snobbishness over the soaps, that would be great.
Go for it.
I mean, that's a given.
That's fine. Yeah. I can take it. Anyway, once you've done that, do follow us on social media at Pilot TV Pod, at James C. Dyer, at Kay Ribeiro, at Boyd Hilton. We will be back in your ears next week. As we said, we're going to cover the Continental on Pilot Plus on Thursday. But next week, God, what happens next week? The Boys Gen V drops at the end of next week. So I'm not quite sure when.
Is it called the Boys Gen V or just Gen V?
I think it's just Gen V, isn't it?
I believe it's the Boys colon Gen V.
I don't know if that's true.
You don't think?
I think it's just.
You think I'm giving it the honorific?
I think so. Yeah.
Well, you know, I like to give it context.
Yeah. So this is like Indiana Jones and the.
No. It is not the Boys in the Temple of the Gen V. Like, no. Anyway. Gen V,
yep.
Or the Boys Gen V,
yep.
Drops next Friday. So I imagine that's going to be a barcode, but we'll have to wait and see. Brassic is back. The Long Shadow drops on ITV.
Yes.
So a few things to choose from. And I'm sure there's a bunch of stuff that I've missed as well, but there will be lots of good stuff on this podcast next week. Right, that's it. Mm. I'm off. We're done. Right.
Yeah, I'm going to go and see Boiling Point. UK at the NFT, the BFI.
Oh, very good. Called,
yeah. I know.
Is this the end of the episode?
Yeah, no, we're just chatting.
Well, Boyd,
now.
No, I mean, we're still recording, but it's fine. Boyd, so what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go and watch the 8th and final episode.
Oh, you prick.
Of Sex Education.
I genuinely am out. Well, it's just weird, though, isn't it? Why would they give one to 7
Look, don't worry, you're still
eight?
Special. It's fine.
I think you're lying.
Pilot out.